Hello friends, the next topic, Dryden as a satirist. Introduction: Dryden is one of the greatest English satirists. He is the first practitioner of classical satire, which after him was to remain in vogue for about 150 years from the very beginning of his literary career. Dryden evinced a sharp satiric bent. He translated some of satires of the Roman writer Persius when he was only a pupil at Westminster. Further, in his comedies, he produced numerous pieces of sparkling satire. He keenly studied the satirical tradition of Rome and France and whatever satire England had to offer. But it was not till he was about 50 that he came to write Absalom and Achitophel, the first of the four major satiric work on which his reputation as a poet is based. With his practice, he gave a new form and direction to English satire and raised into the level of French and Roman satire. He made satire not only a redoubtable weapon to chastise personal and public enemies, but also an important, if not a very exalted, genre of literature, which was later to attract such great writers as Pope, Swift, Addison, and Dr. Johnson. Dryden's four important satires are: the first, Absalom and Achitophel; second, the second part of the Absalom and Achitophel, chiefly written by Nahum Tate and including about 200 lines by Dryden; third, the Medal; fourth, Mac Flack Noi. Dryden's contribution and place. Dryden as a satirist does not fall in with native English tradition of English England. Gascoigne, Dunn, Laws, Hall, Marston, Cleveland, etc., which was carried on by his contemporaries like Oldham and Samuel Butler. Just as in his non-satiric poetry, he reacted against the romanticism of the Elizabethan and confused grotesqueness and formlessness of the imitator of Dunn. Similarly, in his satire, he broke away from the harness disrespect of form and denunciatory tone of English satirist before him. He seems to have looked for inspiration not toward them but a neoclassicist, as he was towards the Roman satiric Horace, Juvenal, and Pyrrhus, and their French followers. The most outstanding and whom was is about Bolleque, both as a critic and as a creative writer. Dryden emphasized and felt the need for artistic control and urbanity of manner. For all successful satire, these qualities are of the nature of prerequisites. It is most essential for a satirist to hide his disgust and moral animus behind a veil of equanimity and urbanity of manner. If he just lost his head at the sight of the object which is to be the target of his attack and comes out with open denunciation or direct name calling, he will not be a successful satirist. A satirist is a propagandist in so far as his effort is to direct and sympathize of the reader into harmony with his own and against the object sought to be satirized. Naturally enough, if he speaks too openly from the position of a partisan, he will cut little ice with the reader. So the satirist should not appear too serious to be taken seriously. Of course, he should be very serious, but he should give the impression of being not very serious, or even natural between the two opposite points of view, one of which is effort is to promote and the other to contract. His relation as far as possible the intensity of soul self-involvement through the employment of some sly indirection of technique. Dryden himself was aware of it when he said that the satirist would make a man die sweetly, call him a fool for a rose, R-O-Z-U-E, without using these opprobrious terms. He distinguished between the slovenly butchering done by a bad satirist and the dexterous stroke which serves the head but leaves if it is standing. Seldom does Dryden indulge in open denunciation or invective, but he often used such indirect technique as irony, sarcasm, and above all this exuberant wit. It is what primarily distinguishes him from his preceders, who were always open and direct in their attacks. His satire is indirect and therefore smooth, urban, and without angularities and harshness. The same is the case with his versification. He found a good satiric vehicle in the heroic couplet and chiseled and planed in it to brilliance. His versification avoid the harshness deliberately cultivated by his young friend Oldham, who also employed the heroic couplet. Observe Hugh Walker in a noted comma. It is this combination of smoothness of verse, lucidity of style, urbanity of manner, which makes Dryden's satire so strictly original. In English, there had hitherto been nothing comparable to it. Not come a close. Controlled contempt. Dryden's satire is remarkable as an artistic expression of controlled contempt. Broadly speaking, the aggregate English satirist Dryden, Pope, and Swift work through different channels. Dryden is a master of scorn and contempt, Pope of rage, and Swift of disgust. Of course, all of them artistically control their respective preceding feeling, else they would not have been great satirists. Dryden, who in T.S. Eliot's phrase is the great master of contempt, unlike his preceders, does not take any moral errors. Dunhall and Marston seems to be speaking from a moral elevation, as if they were saints whose moral sense has been outraged. Now, this take for granted a kind of moral pose which debar satire from amusing an appearance of genuineness or sincerity. Once this moral pose has been seen through by the reader, he cannot accept to be dictated or moved by the satirist, whom he knows to be an erring being like himself. Dryden speaks as one civilized being to other, without pretending to give them lesson in morality. For one thing, he eschews all moral and religious issues. The issue he tackles concern politics, taste and goods, breeding, and only incidentally, moral and religion. Sainsbury observed, and in noted comma, it never does for the political satirist to lose his temper and to rave and rant and denounce with the air of an inspired prophet. In noted comma closed. As a critic says, in noted comma, Dryden assumes no moral airs, firmly controls his satirical spirit, and skillful selects the points and the manner of his attacks. The result is a humorous, disdainful, and yet incisive mockery. In order to come a close, Dryden elevating style. One of Dryden's unique gift is his capacity to ennoble and elevate the object of his satire, even when his motive is to demeanize or depress them. The buoyant beggar, V-I-Z-O-U-R, of his poetry does not let them touch the lowly ground. T.S. Eliot was the first to direct attention to his point when he wrote in his essay on Dryden. Much of Dryden's unique art consists in his ability to make the small into the great, per prosaic into the poetic, the trivial into the magnificent. Even when Dryden pours the wiles of his Scrooge and such characters and Titus Oates, Slingsby, Bethel, and Sadwell, he gives them something to heroic dignity. He extended the dimension of their being. In bracket, in the case of Sadwell, his physical being to bracket close, and make them poetic. His scorn diminishes and depresses them, but his poetry extends and exalts them. His personal animus is often lost in the energy of creation, so that a Mac Flaconi become much more important than the real man called Sadwell Courage, than Titus Oates and Sammy Than Slings by Bethel. Personal envy and malice set their grossness and are burnished into real poetry. The end product has little resemble with the material Dryden start with. Bombay Dobry, Bonamy Dobry observed in Inodagama, we have only to think of Mac Flaconi to forget Sadwell. To think the Achitophel is to forget Shaftesbury, the person are lost in history, and satire are the part of our national consciousness. Everything is all the time compared not with something little but with something great. That way Dryden made us operandi in much different from Pope's. When Pope satirized, he diminishes. When Dryden satirized, he exalted. By exalting and enlarging the object of his satire, Dryden also raised the lowly genre of satire to the level of epic. This was a no small achievement. His work Absalom and Achitophel, to which he gave the title a poem and not a satire, in the first instance in English of a heroic satire. As Anne Jack has pointed out in Augustine's satire, his poem consists of passages peculiar not only to one kind of poetry but to many kind, epic, satire, panegyric, etc. The style seldom become low, the kind of which may be employed for an ordinary satire. Even in his mock heroic satire Mac Flaconi, which is conceived on a much lower plane than Absalom and Achitophel, Dryden does not use very low and vulgar imagery to punish Sadwell. The mock heroic effect is created by the element of incongruity generated by the use of high idiom and imagery for such an allegedly low character as Sadwell. The use of contemporary location, stress, etc. has a further ludicrous effect. In Absalom and Achitophel, the use of biblical parallel has an exalting effect, but in Mac Flaconi, the reference to concrete the historical detail has the effect of the mock heroic. Thus, in a word, whereas Absalom and Achitophel is a heroic satire, Mac Flaconi is a mock heroic satire. However, in both and satirist work, throw high and not low or vulgar imagery and idiom. This exalting effect on his satiric subject is made possible only by Dryden's effective and masterful handling of the heroic couplet, a poetic measure which it was to his credit to perfect into an excellent vehicle of satire by giving to it neatness, epigrammatic cogency, and smart and felicitous phrasing, and fully exploiting the scope it has for balance and antithesis. To a large extent, he regularized the heroic couplet by discouraging the license taken by the earlier practitioner of this measure. He gave each line 5 regular stresses and avoid as far as possible what is called enzement or the trailing of sense from one couplet to the next. His couplets are generally end stopped, and after every line there is generally a natural stop. However, he himself took liberties with the location of a kasura and shifted it within the line, or even dispensed with the altogether at times. His handling of the heroic couplet is not as strict and disciplined as Pope's. For instance, he sometimes used an alexandrian instead of a regular pentameter, and sometimes the couplet grew into a triplet. Pope was strict to avoid such license, and he even took Dryden to task for it. Nevertheless, Dryden's heroic couplets are more energetic, racy, and spontaneous looking than Pope, as a master of contempt sometimes expressed in ironical term. Dryden finds the couplet a very handle medium. Many of Dryden couplets come out with sizzling and sacrificing intensity, and the sound of some of them, as Sainsbury put it, resembles the sound of a slap in the face. Dryden's major satirist. The first Absalom and Achitophel is Dryden's first, and by far his best satire. It was perhaps written at the suggestion of Charles II and was out just a week before the trial of Shaftesbury for sedition. It was thus political in nature and was the representation of the Tory point of view. Its purpose was the malign Shaftesbury as an enemy of peace and the nation, and a seducer of the Duke and Monmouth, the King's illegitimate son. The poem is convinced the near epic dimension, though they contain many elements below the dignity of an epic proper. There is much too little action, though considerable tenseness. Much of the interest of this work lies in the satirical portrait of Shaftesbury, the Duke and the Buckingham, Duke of Buckingham, Slingsby Bethel, and Titus Otis Weld behind the biblical or positive biblical figure of Achitophel, Zimri, Simea, and Chorus respectively. The poem, says Sir Edmund Gosse in inverted comma, really conceits the satirical portrait outcut and polished like jewel and flashing malignant light from all their facets. There are some portraits of the allies of the king too, but they are not so effective. Indeed, Dryden is a great master of the satiric portrait, which was quite fashionable at that time. Unlike Pope, he gave his portrait a typical and often universal character and significance, so that the historical character sought to be satirized is often lost in the finest poetic portrait. Pope was much too malignant ever to lose sight of his target. There is a sensitive variation of tone with which Dryden handled one character after another, as there is in each case a varying degree of contempt and remorse at the sense of wasted and misdirected talent. Second, the 200 odd lines which Dryden contributed to the second part of the Absalom and Achitophel, a third by Nahum Tate, constitute its best part. The rest of the poem is beneath criticism and even contempt. In his contribution, he satirized Shadwell and Alcana Settle in the character of Oz and Doge respectively. Third, the middle subtitle satire against sedition was again topical in Genesis. In spite of Absalom and Achitophel, Shaftesbury was released from captivity to commemorate his release, and Whigs struck a medal bearing the effigy of their hero. This stung Dryden, not action and medal was the result. He called Shaftesbury the ponder of people's heart, and takes him a task for his seditious activities, which would, Dryden's alleges, plunge the country into ruin. He vigorously upholds, as in Absalom and Achitophel, Hobbes' theory of political covenant. Fourth, Mac Flecknoe is the only satire in which Dryden lessens a personal enemy, even though his target, Sadwell, was the vigorous upholder of the Whig cause. The subtitle of the work is a satire on the true blue Protestant poet T.S. Of course, T.S. is Thomas Sadwell. The poem is of the nature of a lampoon. Dryden ridicules Sadwell by representing him as the fittest heir to Flecknoe, the king of the realm of dullness. Flecknoe was a very voluminous and terribly dull poet of Ireland. He is shown to single out Sadwell, one to his numerous progeny, as Sadwell alone of all my sons is he who stand confirmed in full stupidity. Then he described the coronation and of Sadwell in a mock heroic style. The poem was to serve as a model for Pope's Dunciad, one of the most powerful poems of the 18th century. The topic, Dryden as a satirist, over.